Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast Zoom version. I'm up north. Bob's up north. We were supposed to do this right after the Blue Jays game ended. And the only thing that made me more angry about the Jays was I'm still having technical issues. This was a simple one. But I got to tell you, Bob, I was filled with rage, but I feel dumb and helpless when it comes to technology for things that had worked for 6 years and now is giving me so much trouble.
You remind me a lot of my dad when it comes to technology. And I mean that in a good way and a bad way. Like, my dad's a very analog person, a very brilliant person and a lovely person, but he hates technology. It doesn't come to him naturally. But what he does is he learns exactly what he needs to do and then never deviates. So if there is a deviation required, he is totally at a loss, but he can function as long as you show him exactly what to do and it never has to change. And that's you doing tech.
And that's me for the last 6 years doing this podcast, doing the wine podcast. I did a wine interview where same thing. I could only use one mic, and me and a guy I just met before are sharing a mic. That was awkward. But no, Bob, you nailed it. That's me. I figure out, someone tell me what to do, and then I will do that every time without fail.
I'm exactly the same way. I am very much my father's son and your friend in this regard. I don't have an intuitive sense of how to fix stuff. I watched silently, of course, because there was no sound, but I peered into your living room in your cottage, and Amy, who's an editor and is pretty smart about tech, was over your shoulder, and you had that classic thing where somebody's trying to be helpful and you know that's true, but you kind of hate them for helping you.
Yes. Oh yeah. Oh, it's me and my worst was like that moment. Yeah. Yeah. No,
it's funny. That's my dad at his worst too. Whenever he says that I have an issue with the printer, I won't phone for 36 hours. An emergency, we'll deal with it. But if it's just you and your printer, let's just let the smoke clear.
Yeah.
And then we'll go back to being a family later.
Yeah, exactly. speaking of rage.
Yes.
The Blue Jays, I feel like the last couple of years, were watching the local hockey team disappoint the local home fans. And they were like, you know what? Hold my beer. I feel we can really make a dent in terms of which team is pissing off Toronto more.
Toronto, the Jays specifically, the Jays got lucky because everyone's so focused on the Leafs, because it's only been since the early 90s since the Jays made a World Series. So that's only 30 years as opposed to the 50 plus on the other side.
60 plus, Bob, be fair. Yeah.
No, you're right. Math's not my strong suit. Math and tech, don't come to me. In a lot of ways, it's not as disappointing as the Leafs, I don't think, but that just may be an emotional reaction, because when I think about it logically, it's actually more disappointing how they flamed out.
Well, it is different. And unfortunately, you can pick which one. To me, the big issue about when they pulled Jose Barrios was, I don't mind that they had a plan. I don't mind that they're looking at analytics. And, you know, if you go through a lineup so many times, the batters eventually get the advantage. It was the intellectual inflexibility. This is our plan and we will not deviate. And there's a lot of different ways to figure out who's smart, you know, who can learn, memorize, who knows all the state capitals, fluent in 8 languages. But having a flexible mind is one of them. So I looked at what the Blue Jays did with Barrios and I'm like, that was dumb. That was a dumb move because you weren't flexible. You weren't able to adapt.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's almost like you in tech. They were you in tech. They just had one plan and they were sticking to it no matter what happened. And the second it changed, they fell apart.
Yeah.
Mike Tyson used to say that everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. Mm-hmm. And I thought a lot about this because you can make the case that more times out of that, their plan would be more successful more times than not. If you played 100 times, their plan would be more successful, say, 54% of the time.
Right.
But in this other 46% of the time, you're not looking at what's happening on the mound. And it's interesting how people are mad at the Jays, but they're also mad at a way that baseball is being played. You've heard the team repeatedly say, there's a lot of numbers in the game. when you're watching the broadcast and Buck was kind of implying and almost saying it, who gives a shit about the numbers? Your guy is dealing, be a manager. But you're not really playing baseball anymore. You're playing flowchart.
And that's what got, I think that's one of the reasons why everyone was filled with rage. It wasn't about just Snyder, the Jays losing, or Barrios was great and you pulled him. It was the more bigger picture that as sports fans, we want to believe that decisions are being made partially by emotion, gut, experience, not what the Acer computer is telling you to do.
The Acer. I bet you they have an upgrade on an Acer by now, although it is the Rogers family. So who knows? When Gausman got pulled too early last year and Seattle wound up coming back, that was a mistake. But it was a mistake we've seen a manager make all the time, which is you didn't trust your guy. It didn't feel like he was being yanked because there was some kind of alternate plan. He was dealing. They were going to go to the bullpen. You probably could have gotten a couple more innings out of him. That felt like a baseball mistake. But I think we're all of us as sports fans, and I want to go somewhere with this, where I think we were grossed out by this was it felt like when you go to do payroll and there's no longer someone to talk to, but you have to enter all your numbers into a portal and then the fucking portal doesn't work. And so it's like, well, we have a handy email for you to answer. And then some bot answers your questions. We all looked at that and thought, are there any people playing this game? Like when Vladdy got picked off a second, that was stupid. When Bo Bichette got thrown out at home, that was debatable. Those are sports things. But this was really like the modern world in a nutshell, which is just we have a plan and we're not going to pay attention to anything other than our plan.
Yeah. No, you're right. We crave humans, you know, when you're on hold. It's like I'll be on hold for 25 minutes if I get a human after that 25 minutes. If you say, oh, no, you can go online and our handy dandy online help center should be able to resolve your issue. No, I want a human to talk to. And it's the same thing there. It's why we don't like AI. We want people creating.
I work for Apple and I've got a computer that I've got to change because they give you laptops to work on, Apple approved ones. And I've got an old one and I've got to switch to the new one. And it's been sitting in a box at my house for 4 months because they just don't want to deal with the tech people to get me switched from one that works to one that's arrived. You know, Matt, I know this is a bit of a hot take, but this has kind of been why I never wanted robo umps, even though people would say they make mistakes. Even people would say, you know, get the call right. That's all I care about. I actually think when you scratch below the surface, it's not all people care about. That the human error part of sports is one of the most important part of sports. And if we remove it, then we might as well just be doing robo simulations of games.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, God bless the NFL, the billion dollar league. And who decides a first down? Two older men and a metal chain.
Yeah, but there's a line on TV that tells us whether they're right or wrong.
But it doesn't matter because it's still two men, usually, you know, retired, holding a metal chain.
VAR in soccer drives fans nuts because, you know, someone might have scored a gorgeous goal, but it's called off because they were a quarter of a centimeter offside. And is it right? Yeah, it's right. But you also nullified an incredible play that might have turned an entire game around, maybe an entire season around. Oh, but it was a quarter of an inch off. So I guess we can't go with it. People find that intellectually very unsatisfying.
Yes. Same thing when a beautiful goal, but 18 seconds earlier in hockey, you know, oh, wait, nope, the skate, he was offside. It's like, I'll just move on.
Technically, it's true, but it's kind of like I got a saying, which is don't ask a cop if you can jaywalk. He has to say no.
Yeah.
We'd like a life where we can jaywalk.
Yeah.
As long as the road is clear, am I really hurting anybody?
I am. I wanted to throw a weird analogy or comparison. Comparison, that's weird. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is Cameron Diaz.
Oh, my God. I've got a crazy one about OG Anunoby later. So let's just do a battle of insane analogies. We'll start with yours. Vladdy to Cameron. I like your odds so far.
Yeah, well, I get different gender and different race, so I'm already off to a good start here.
Different expertise.
Yeah. Cameron Diaz peaked in Something About Mary. She's never done anything even as good. Now, she's done some stuff here and there that was, you know, that was okay. She did a nice job and, you know, being John Malkovich or whatever, but nothing compared to that. And Vlad, 2021, second to Shohei Ohtani in the MVP. Then he took a, you know, a noticeable drop last year and an even bigger drop this year. And my concern is Vlad is going to be 2022 version, very good player, but he'll never again come close to being what he was in 2021. And maybe that's, you know, just me freaking out and he's super young. But after watching him the last 2 years, I feel like he's Cameron Diaz.
Well, I love the analogy, although I don't necessarily agree because I think she was really good in Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, you know, and, she was. She was.
And that was a big
hit. She filled that role very well.
But maybe it's a good analogy in the sense that Cameron Diaz never started becoming bad. She just wasn't great anymore. But she was great in Something of America. So yeah, okay, I see it. And I'm going to buy it. I kind of like it. Here's my take on Vladdy. Without being a baseball scout, but just having watched baseball my whole life, the sport is filled with guys who come in, have tons of promise, and then don't live up to it. But it doesn't make them bad players. It's just we kind of penciled in before the fact a Hall of Fame career, and he's going to have a good career.
Yeah.
We can't look at it as a failure because who doesn't want to have a good career? But we can look at it as a disappointment because we were led to believe and kind of saw it was going to go somewhere else. Sports is like, I don't want to talk about Fraser Minton yet, but we all have a tendency to get very excited about things that look really good up front and then they cool off. I want to go back to this idea of John Schneider and Ross Atkins and the analytics team. It kind of pinpoints something for me that is a bit of a hot take and maybe a bit surprising. But we all assume that the point of sports, the reason why sports exists, is to win games, to win championships.
Yes.
But if that were true, then we would love the fact that they did the right thing statistically and it didn't work out for them this time. It's like when you go to the casino, you're not passionate about the cards you get at the blackjack table. You just understand I'm playing percentages. Sometimes they're up, sometimes they're down, but you don't deviate from the percentages. You just don't.
One slight pushback. When I get a opening hand of 12 to 14, five hands in a row, I'm really passionate at that moment.
Okay, fair point, fair point. But the strategy remains the same.
Strategy remains the same. The
strategy, and if you want to play it that way, you're probably going to win more often than not, or you're going to maximize your opportunities. I actually have come to think the point of sports is not to win. The point of sports is to be interesting. And so when crazy shit happens, it's actually better for sports than just, you know, I was thinking about this morning as I was walking the dog. Do you remember Pernell Whitaker, the boxer?
Yeah.
He's one of the greatest boxers of the modern era, but he was calculated and played defense and angles. And he would just pop enough jabs and accumulate enough points to beat just about anyone. But you know why we don't talk about Pernell Whitaker? Because we don't care about the wins. What we would rather have is Arturo Gatti, who was not half the fighter that Pernell Whitaker was, but would get in there and have slugfests. The reason why boxing was, and I guess in some ways continues to be, a fascination is because we're not looking for someone to outpoint someone else and just squeak by with a tidy victory. We want to see changes of pace and excitement and blood and guts and all these things. What we got with the Jays and John Schneider was basically the accountants saying, here's the way we can win more times than not. And it was not interesting. We're mad about the Kevin Gausman decision last year, but we're mad differently this time. Everyone has said, I don't want a computer telling me what to do. It's because it's not about the winning. We want it to be human, and human is flawed.
How much do you think John Schneider hated himself when he walked to the mound? He later said that, yeah, Berríos' stuff was electric. Sports is supposed to be a meritocracy. You're supposed to reward excellence. Well, Berríos was excellent. You're supposed to trust your players. Well, clearly the organization didn't trust him. I wonder, John Schneider, just old school manager, how much did he hate himself when he did that walk of shame?
I imagine a lot. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people criticize him saying, well, you should have just stood up to everyone. But come on, like, you can argue that was the wrong plan. But think about yourself at your own place of work. How many times does your boss say we're going to do this? And you go, you know, I just don't think so. I think we're going to go my way this time. And it doesn't work out. And you're all of a sudden out of a job. Or even if it does work out and all of a sudden you're a problem maker who doesn't listen. They made the wrong plan. Schneider may have been part of that plan, but you can't blame him for enacting it. I don't think.
Oh, no, no, no. I put this more on Atkins, Shapiro, and the analytics department than John Schneider. Schneider gets some of the blame, but I look at the people above him.
You know, Scotty Mac, Scott MacArthur, who still follows the Jays and has a pod with Richard Griffin. And Scotty Mac was always someone we loved when we were at TSN 1050. He made a really good point, which is Shapiro talks less to the media than just about anybody else. I mean, we think Shanahan is behind the veil of secrecy. Shapiro, I'm not even sure if I was sitting next to him in a second cup, I would know what he looked like. These guys need to be more accountable. And, you know, Ross Atkins will probably take the blame for this, and he may even take the fall, but it's an organizational approach. And it's fucking, you know, it's so weird, Matt, just as an aside. So on one hand, you've got this decision, which was robotic. And then on the other hand, you've got base running errors, which were moronic.
Yeah.
It's a real swing.
It's true. One was a mistake of emotion. One was a mistake of just following the machines. And as for like Shapiro, the only time you really hear him talk is when he's talking about the next set of renovations. Like, I know more about what, you know, the outfield setup in terms of what bars are going to be there than I do about his philosophy with the team.
I was thinking about the Jays, the Leafs teams that we grew up with, if you're of a certain vintage in the 70s that were run by Harold Ballard, and they sucked. Mm-hmm. And you had someone to hate, and that guy hated you right back.
Yep.
And there was a love-hate relationship between everybody in that organization, and how much less satisfying it was when it was the pension fund. And then all of a sudden, it's just a bunch of nameless bureaucrats that are making decisions based on slide rules and tables.
Yep.
Yeah, you really need something to hate. But this goes back to what we talked about last week, which is sports is just way more interesting when it's grounded in emotion than when it's grounded in logic.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And by the way, I want to get to your OJ Anunoby, but it was really funny when you mentioned, was it Fraser Minton?
Yeah.
I remember thinking, I don't know if I tweeted this out, but I said it on air, but I'm like, well, now that the Jays are out of the playoffs, time to learn who this Fraser Minton fella is.
Well, you got 9 games. You got 9 games to figure it out. Maybe, I guess we'll see. Today, I want to do an NBA ... around the Raptors.
Yeah.
And I want to play a new game with you about the Leafs.
Yeah.
I've been reading this graphic novel by a guy named Will Eisner. And he's one of the originators of the graphic novel form. And he writes a lot about early Jewish immigrant experience in New York City and in America. Mm-hmm. And so it's filled with all these Yiddish words. So I want to do one, which is called What Makes You Schwitz?
All right.
Where I give you two options. And Schwitz just means like to sweat.
To sweat. Yeah. Yeah. I'm schwitzing out here. Yeah.
Yeah. So I give you two options about something and you tell me which one of them makes you schwitz more.
Let's do it.
Do you want to do that now?
Sure.
Okay. So Leafs preseason, what makes you schwitz? First one ever. Center depth or defense going into this year? Which one of those things regarding the Maple Leafs makes you schwitz?
The defense. John Klingberg hasn't been good since 2019. You're asking a lot out of him. TJ Brody, surprisingly bad in the playoffs last year. Mark Giordano is close to my age. I'm not sure if Timothy Liljegren is ready to make that top four. And Morgan Rielly is an excellent defenseman, but he's not one of those classic Victor Hedman number one guys. So I'm going to go with the defense.
I'm not even sure he's an excellent defenseman. If you go back to the regular season last year, a lot of people were worried about that contract, but he played really well in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And generally does. So he's almost the opposite of the Leafs team, where regular season you're like, I don't know if he's worth it. And then in the playoffs, you go, thank God we have this guy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You didn't even mention Giordano. And
oh, I said Giordano. He's like,
oh, did you mention him? Oh,
okay. Yeah,
I didn't listen to him.
Yeah.
Well, let's take this one by one. I have an irrational response to Klingberg because while I was in California, I watched Anaheim play live a couple times. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked by how a guy with so many question marks around his career could be so shit and not look like the best player on a team that was trying to lose for Connor Bedard.
Yeah.
He's trying to look good to show NHL GMs that he's still got a career in him. The team is trying to lose, and he's still one of the worst players out there. Goes to Minnesota, sucks again. This is a bit of recency bias, but not that much because really, like you say, it's been 3 or 4 years since he was. And even when he was good, Dallas gave up on him because the stats indicate that they actually did better while he was off the ice than on.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a sieve.
Yeah.
So I'm like you. By the way, the defense makes me schwitz way more than the center position. And I'm not happy about the center position, but I think the defense has a chance to be, I think center could be fine and defense has a chance to be poor, depending if you catch the breaks or not.
I think I'm good with the centers, you know, between Matthews and Tavares and maybe a little Nylander experiment. But if Kampf is your number four center, that's really good. We'll see. I mean, it's all about the third center spot. But yeah, my concern is much more on defense than it is on the center position.
They've never really replaced Jake Muzzin. Jake Muzzin was that stalwart guy who played, I don't want a safe game, but a safer game and a smart game and could be physical and was really reliable.
Yeah.
I know Jake McCabe was brought in, but he's kind of a bottom six guy, if we're honest about it. And he certainly wasn't a Jake Muzzin replacement. In a weird way, as much as I dislike Klingberg, and that's quite a bit, I actually think Brody is the magic key to this, because if he's the Brody from the playoffs and it's the slide has started, because what is he now, 33, 34?
Yeah, yeah. He's early 30s. Yeah, 32, 30, yeah, at least.
Yeah. So who knows when the decline starts, but they can't afford him to decline at all.
Oh, no.
So that's kind of the magic guy for me going into this year.
I view the Leafs defense as it's high floor, low ceiling. Good depth, a lot of players who, you know, can deserve 18 minutes a night, but not a lot of guys that are going to be true difference makers.
When you look at teams that have won a cup, and whether it was Vegas or Tampa Bay or just teams that have done well recently, almost like other than the Pittsburgh Penguins going back a bunch of years, I can't really think of someone who didn't have a great defense and actually won a cup.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's a bit like a bullpen in baseball. You think you can kind of get by during the regular season on big hits and starters, but when everyone's trying their hardest, you got to secure that back end.
The thing is, we always give the one example, you know, the Penguins when Ron Hainsey was playing all those minutes. And it's always like, well, if everyone's always using just one example, maybe that proves the point that it really doesn't exist.
You're going to appreciate this, Matt, because I'm going to go cross sport. You ready? The Pens defense from that year was the 2003 Detroit Pistons.
I knew that was the team you're going to go with. Yep.
Yeah. The example in basketball that, see, you don't need a big star to win. It happened once in the last 25 years.
Yeah, exactly. All you need, though, is five players that are all between a B plus and an A minus. That's it. Oh, wait a minute. Teams don't have that either.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, it's never happened since.
Yeah. Yeah. Their worst player was Tayshaun Prince.
It's a bit like when you go by a corner store and they have a sign that says lottery ticket that won here, you know, $2 million lottery ticket sold here. And you think like, oh, that's an advertisement to go there. That's an advertisement to not go there. Because what are the odds that it's going to happen twice?
Yeah, exactly. And it happened again, 30 years ago. It's like, wait a minute, is that Brian Mulroney poster in the background? Like, it's been a while.
Oh, Mulroney. You know, I was so quick to protest him, but man, I wish we had him back.
Oh my God, it's so true.
I thought he was so bad, but apparently I was so wrong. I'm not as in love with the centers as you are. I got a bad feeling about Tavares. Not that he's going to be a bad player, but just the way the team is constituted, he needs to be an excellent player. And we're starting to see signs more and more. I think he's going to get his points. He's going to be on the power play, but 5-on-5, we have seen, I'm not breaking any stories here. He's not the best. Just with every passing year, guys slow down. And what's interesting is a guy who knows a lot about hockey said to me once, Jeff Merrick, that when guys get older, it's actually not their skating they lose first, it's their hands.
Oh, okay.
And for a guy who makes his living with his hands, the second that skill depreciates, I think you'll see a big depreciation across the board. I'm not saying it's going to happen all this year, but I'd feel a lot better if he was on the wing. And then Kampf is defensively good, but can't score. Domi is can score, but can't play defense. I don't love him at center. Nylander, I don't want to say it's going to be good or bad so far. It's just too early to say, but I don't know. It's hard to go from wing to center.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. My only pushback is that, you know, it's I bet almost every other NHL fan base is having even more fretting thoughts about their center position for their respective team.
Well, that's true, but they're not where we are in the arc of
that is, team. You know what? Yep. Nope. Good point.
They've had about 8 years to sort this out, and they're still sorting it out. Which brings us to Fraser Minton. Did you watch the pregame last night? Did you watch the preseason game last night?
I have watched jack shit of the preseason. I haven't watched 1 second of any preseason, and I feel great about it.
Yeah. Yep. And that's a totally reasonable answer. He looked pretty good. I don't know if he's the answer, but O'Neal made a really great point on the pregame. And he said, sometimes it's good for a team to have hungry kids who just want to crack the lineup. And when they get there, they'll do anything to stay. Especially for a team that's been in a bit of a doldrum, that sometimes that youthful energy can really help out. And it made me think about how exciting it is for fans when you get a kid line. Like if it was Minton and Nyes on the same line, like, don't we just love a kid line?
It's a great point. We love a good kid line. When was the last time the Leafs had a kid line?
I looked this up. It was one actually that I grew up with, and it was the kid line of the 1979 season, which was Rocky Saginaw, Lori Boschman, and John Anderson.
I was 4 at the time, and you were like 8. And
I was 10, so there you go. Yeah. And then, okay, so I'm going to go back to who was the original kid line from the 30s. It was Busher Jackson, it was Charlie Conacher, and it was, who was the third guys? I can't remember right now.
Bob, this is so long ago, these guys probably also fought the Nazis. Like they tried to take a
I think they were too old to fight them.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe
they might have fought the Germans the first time around.
Yeah, they were. They had to deal with. They had to deal with trench warfare and the Kaiser.
I love a good kid line. They're really hard to come up with because it's hard to be young and good.
Yeah.
But Taylor Hall, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and Jordan Eberle for a brief moment. That was exciting.
Yep.
Yeah. So maybe we'll have. I mean, Nyes has looked really good. I know you haven't watched, but he has.
And I like every day I dutifully read about everything that's going on. You know, just I make my little Leaf notes. I've got my Leaf folder that I'll bust out next week now that, you know, the Jays are done. Let's see. Okay. We got 9 minutes left
in the whole show.
Well, yeah, because it's the 40-minute Zoom.
Okay. Well, let me do a quick dot, dot, dot then.
Yeah.
And we didn't even get a chance to do heist movies because my wallet was stolen.
Oh, that's true. I know your wallet and your phone. Okay. Dot, dot, dot. I'll give quick answers.
Hey, quickly. All right. When Masai says he'll talk contract when his player stops playing selfishly, I kind of love him again. Dot, dot, dot. Drew Holiday going to the Bucks instead of Miami is not the quote, taking back power from the Stars. Telling an NBA player we'll talk contract when you play winning basketball again, that's team empowerment. Dot, dot, dot. The one move we're not talking enough about this year is the new coach. Who the hell is Darko Rajakovic and why can he make the Raps better? Dot, dot, dot. And then, you ready for this?
Yep.
OG is the Raps Willie Nylander. Discuss. Dot, dot, dot.
Oh, those are really good. I'm going to throw out the coach one now. I still don't know how to say his last name, but I get to the start of the regular season to figure that out. I want to go on the Masai Ujiri one because this one's curious. I'm not going to, you guys are selfish. You guys are selfish. You guys are selfish. However, I'm not going to trade any of you unless like I get a king's ransom. Do you love the player or are they selfish? Which one is it, Masai?
Well, that's a great question. I think he believes in them and he has had success with tough love before. Mm-hmm. That he told Kyle once upon a time, you will be out of this league and no one will remember you, or you can have a couple of contracts that set up your family for life. Which player do you want to be?
Right. Yeah.
I think he's had success with players who have underperformed or disappointed him by just being that guy who will actually tell them the truth. I think he's been that guy with Pascal before.
Mm-hmm. He has.
Maybe he feels he can do it with OG Anunoby, where he just sits him down and says, look, you have two futures. One of them is all-star and the other one is fourth best player on a pretty good team.
It's a good point,
yeah. So maybe it's bias where he's just using what's worked before, but who doesn't?
Yeah.
And I love the fact that, you know, everyone's like, well, you have to, you know, Pascal, I mean, he's good. You have to give him whatever he wants. No, you don't. Because if you don't think he's a winning player, like this goes back again to what we talked about, logic versus emotion. There is such a thing as a winning player. We all know it.
Yeah.
If you're not going to be one, don't be on the team.
Well, I think the weird thing is how they're handling Siakam is not something we see in the NBA. Guy under 30, two-time an all-NBA player, two-time an all-star. And yeah, he's not a top. He's probably the 21st to 19th best player in the NBA, somewhere around there. Usually offers are given, extensions are given, conversations are had. There's been none of those things.
Okay, so you want to do the OG and Willie Nylander?
Let's compare
this to the Vladdy and Cameron Diaz.
Mm-hmm.
Willie Nylander, because in both cases, we know they're good. We think they might be very good, or maybe they're disappointing, and we can't decide which at any given time. We know that they're both on good contracts, but they're both going to want bigger contracts, and we can't decide exactly which player we believe in, and we can't decide whether to love him or think he's overrated. And depending on who you talk to, they think the other side is crazy. He's our Willie Nylander, and he's not our best player, and he's not our second best player, but he's our third best player, and he might be important to the future.
And would be highly coveted by another team. There'd be a lot of other
teams.
You get
tons for him.
Yeah.
But we might also overpay him. And it's time to decide right now. He is our Willie Nylander.
I like it. No, it makes sense. I think Nylander has accomplished more in his respective sport than Ananobi has. However, beyond that, I think it's a good comparison. And where they both fit in their respective ecosystems. Yeah, they're the third best player on the team. People will yell and scream about OG Anunoby, and I've seen this before, Bob. People seem to get passionate when it comes to Nylander as well.
I feel like the last season quieted a lot of people, and people just think he's really good now. So it could be Willie's just a little bit further ahead in the developmental arc.
Yeah.
But the counter to that is the OG skill set is essential for NBA winning basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So he might be more valuable to a team if he's really good than Willie is. Although really nothing's more important than goals.
Yeah. Yeah.
So but really was the third best player, and people can't decide whether or not it's better off to package him up because you want depth.
Yep.
Or you can't let go of him because he's better than people really think.
I like it. Yeah. No, that's a really good comparison between the two. And I mean, good for Nylander. He's like, listen, I told my agent, go, you know, negotiate, go figure it out, but don't bug me until we're close to the finish line. Until we're close to the finish line, don't bug me. I think it's the right approach that Nylander's taking. And if people are nervous, David Pastrnak signed his extension like 4 months into the NHL season last year.
I think there's just so much schwitzing going on because you'd like it to be easy. This one actually matters. Remember when I was on the air with Cebulski and Luke Shen in his first RFA go around, that's how long we've been doing this. He was unsigned and people were like, oh my God, Luke Shen, you know, he's the future defenseman and this and that. And you look back at it and go, I think Nylander is probably more important than Luke Shen was.
We just like certainty. Sports fans, we like certainty. We like to know where everything is. Oh, you're here for this long? Okay, good. Now I know. It's, you know, sort of how it goes.
All right. Hey. So we've covered a lot of topics here, but I promised we would do food and wine for every episode. So I was thinking, Maddie, with this being Thanksgiving weekend, why don't you give us one or two good bottles of wine for your Thanksgiving table?
We're going to keep it local. I want you to go either a Niagara from Thomas Batchelder Chardonnay or Kloss and Chase Chardonnay from Prince Edward County. As for the red wine, you want to go Pinot Noir or Gamay. Taz does excellent, excellent work. 13th Street does some really good stuff. So I think you can't go wrong with Niagara, Prince Edward County, Chardonnay, and Pinot Noir.
Now, do you pick those because they pair well with turkey or they're just good?
They pair well. Pinot Noir, high acid, pairs well with a lot of different foods. And on Thanksgiving, you're going to have a spread. And Chardonnay, especially nice big Chardonnay, can work well with the white meat. And Chardonnay and mashed potatoes, it's a winning combination.
Oh, so you picked some jack of all trades wines, but master of none?
There you go.
All right. So my food recommendation, and I'm going to go to the Americans for this because we don't do this at Canadian Thanksgiving, but Americans do this all the time. And you know this because you celebrate American Thanksgiving. But as a side, mac and cheese.
Oh, yeah.
The Americans got it right. I don't know what it is about mac and cheese, but has it ever made a meal worse?
No. Everyone always takes mac and cheese on their plate. Always. You get to be an adult eating a kid's food and it's acceptable.
Oh, my God. I love mac and cheese. When I was a kid, my mom used to make this macaroni and cheese casserole, and she would get a roaster and fill it up with the elbow macaroni. And so here's a recommendation. You put a can of tomato, Heinz tomato juice in it, you know, load it up with tons of cheddar is good. But then she would lay strips of bacon on top. So as it broiled in the oven, the bacon, kind of like people do this with turkey too, to keep it moist, but all the bacon fat seeps in. It is not good for you, but it is delicious. Like it is maybe like a heart attack in a roaster.
Bob, I gained 5 pounds just hearing that recipe. We got 30 seconds left, so I'm just going to wish you and your family a happy Thanksgiving, and thank God we actually were able to record an episode.
Yeah, and to everybody out there, have a fantastic weekend. Shall we wrap her up?
Do her, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.